remove our consciousness from the cycle of birth and death altogether. That is our choice. There are higher forms of life. Within this universe, there are many, many planets. First of all, we understand there are higher forms right within this planet. There are people who are born and in an atmosphere of great intelligence, great piety, great spirituality. That's a very high birth. That means they have begun in spiritual life. Whatever you have accomplished is not lost to death. 80% God conscious, you will begin your next life 81% with all facility to continue. That is the laws of karma. That is the laws of God. Now, within this universe, there are also lower planets and higher planets. There are planets where there is suffering available that is far beyond our imagination in this world. And there's also existences within planets where there is such a long life and such immense pleasure that we can never even imagine it in this earth. This earth is a middle planet. So besides going up and down within this earth, if our piety or impiety is very, very extreme, we can reap the results of grandiose sensual fulfillment in the higher planets or intense pain and suffering in the lower planets. But Krishna says in Gita, from the highest planet in this world, in this material world, down to the lowest, they are all essentially places of misery, because whether you're pious or impious, your pious or impious results are going to run out and then you have to die. Therefore, human form of life is especially meant to transcend piety or impiety through self-realization and go beyond birth and death. Yes. Depending on the person you're seeing and the places, it could be true or it could not be true. But potentially it is true, in the sense that through various mystic arts, we can come in contact with deceased relatives, friends, or other living beings whose souls are on an astral level of consciousness, unembodied. Their mind intelligence, we can communicate with them beyond the gross form of communication. But the question is that very important? For self-realization, it has no importance. In other words, what we want to do is realize our own true self. Exactly the whereabouts of our mother or father or our great-grandfather or somebody else who have left, it's basically just to satisfy our curiosity. Through this process, we gain really no realization or purification in our life. It's just like if you've run away from home and your parents track you down, they'll be satisfied to know where you are. That means their curiosity is satisfied. But does it help them to understand God? So similarly, after someone dies, it is a fact, through mystical arts, you can track them down. But does it help you solve the problem of birth and death for them or you? So this type of methodology or approach, at the most, it just satisfies our curiosity. it doesn't really solve the problem of suffering for ourselves or for them. Somebody who hasn't asked a question? See, what he's talking about, you cannot change that person's karma. You cannot change that person's position in life. You can only communicate briefly.
That particular moment of time, that person...
No, he's there. You can simply communicate with that person's subtle consciousness, that person's subtle body or his mind. We do not consider this very significant. But you see, the dog is responding to immediate sensual impulses. But he doesn't have the power to discriminate beyond that, to ask relevant questions beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. What you're talking about, various dogs will respond different ways to defending. But the response is simply to an immediate fear. They cannot try to discriminate the solution to fear. Why am I afraid? How can I overcome this fear? They're simply reacting for self-preservation, not for self-realization. They have no power to do that.
So death is a part of life. Death is a part of life. So why do we fear of death? Because it's part of life. So everybody cares about the death. Because everybody knows death is part of life.
People fear death because they do not understand life. When you understand the true quality of life, then you are transcendental or beyond fear of death.
Sometimes it happens that you know that your mind is going in the wrong direction, but you want to control it, but you cannot. So why is it?
What is the last?
Can you explain? So why is it? So why you cannot control your mind?
Because you see, you have conditioned your mind to go wherever the senses drag it, moment after moment. Just like if a child is spoiled, if a child is just given its way at all times, then if you say no to the child, he'll start screaming and crying, right? But if the child is properly disciplined with love and devotion by the parent, then the child will remain peaceful even if he doesn't get what he wants, and he'll obey. So our mind is like a child. We've spoiled it. We've just let it chase after the sense objects birth after birth after birth. So now, when the mind wants something and you say no, the mind says yes. And there's a battle. You have to recondition your mind. Just like if you're addicted to smoking cigarettes, why is it so difficult to give up? Because your mind has surrendered so many times to saying yes that when you finally say no, it says no, no, yes. But if from the very beginning you say no, if you've never smoked, do you have any problem saying no to a cigarette? But if you've been smoking for 30 years, do you have any problem? Too much problem. But we have to accept that we're in this position where we are today. and we have to make the best use of a bad bargain. If you understand the effects of smoking cigarettes, no matter how hard it is, you're going to say no. It's going to be more difficult because of the conditioning, because you've been spoiled to saying yes. But it must be done if you do not want to die a horrible death. So similarly, the mind is conditioned by society, by the senses. Now we have to recondition the mind to follow the dictations of our intelligence, which is given by God. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in response to Arjuna's question is very much like yours. He said, the mind is so difficult to control. I think it is more difficult to control than the raging wind. And Krishna said, yes, what you are saying is correct. But by constant practice and detachment, the mind can be controlled. And what is that constant practice and detachment? Detachment means the willingness to say no according to the dictations of your intelligence to what is not right. That is detachment. And practice means to say yes to what is right. To purify the mind. Just like we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. This mantra immediately puts the mind in a spiritual atmosphere. So when the mind is by its previous impressions longing for something that is not good, rather than just saying no, we have to say no, but then we have to replace it with something better by engaging in some charitable work in the service of God, or by chanting the name of God, or by reading something that reminds us of God. You see, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. As long as the mind is idle, it cannot say no for long. You have to replace it with something better. Just like if a baby child is having fun playing with a razor blade. If you take away the razor blade, he's going to cry. He's going to start having tantrums and fits. Give it back. I'm enjoying it. But if you give the child something better, if you give the child some ladu, then the child will forget all about the razor blade. So we have to treat our mind like a child. Our intelligence has to be like a parent to our childish mind. You have to say no to what's not good, but just saying no is not enough. Because if you just say no, he's going to find another razor blade. Or something worse. Right? You have to say no, but simultaneously you have to fill the mind with something positive, something spiritual. And through this process of practice and detachment, yes, we can bring the mind in a perfectly peaceful condition where we are perceiving the eternal bliss of the soul within us. And then in whatever we do in life, we can express that love.
What a question. It sounds very rhetoric coming from a human or intelligence. But humans say that renunciation, you must renounce. Your requirements for living should go down. We as humans have so many requirements. We need just a million number of things to survive, to be able to live, to be able to get along with people. The very fact that we need language in such a very defined form is a requirement that we need to live. And when we say that a person can renounce so many number of things, he's better off than us. And the ultimate is that he renounces almost everything. And a person, a sadhu at the ultimate level, need not even speak for days, years, he still gets along. So you say that this person is better off, he's renounced, he's at a higher plane of achievement of life than we are. The animals, they don't have any requirement for it. We may think as humans that they are lower down than us. Their requirement for life are so much less. quality in life or something to be achieved. They already achieved it. How can we go on saying that? I mean, whenever we talk as a human, we say, yes, we are the highest form of life. We've achieved something. I mean, we are the best, we are the closest to God. Why not an insect? Brain to body weight ratio is 100 times better than our cars. He almost doesn't need anything.
You see, your definition of renunciation is incomplete. I'll tell you a little story, and I'll let you be the judge of which is a higher sense of renunciation. Let us say that Devamrita, he drops 100 rupees on the street. And we all see that he dropped it. One person says, ah, he dropped it. Finders, keepers, losers, weepers, they say. And he picks it up and say, it is mine. That person is called a thief. Another person says, Devamrita dropped this 100 rupees. If I'm a thief, that will be bad karma upon me. I don't want to touch it. I don't want to look at it. I'll just ignore it altogether. That person hasn't really done any good. He's foolish. And another person says, oh, Devamrita has dropped this $100. And he picks it up and goes to Devamrita and says, please, here's your 100-rupee note. Which of the three is better? The last. Everyone agrees. So, it is explained in Gita, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shanti mirchtuchi, that everything is the property of God. If you can create, maintain, and destroy and have perfect control over something, that is yours. But we cannot we have no power to create, maintain, and destroy anything, ultimately. So nothing is ours. Everything is the property of God. So one person is taking the energy of this world, which is God's energy, and saying, this is mine. That person is like a thief. Another person is saying, if everything is God's, I do not want to touch anything. I will not speak. I will go to the Himalayas. I will just sit and close my eyes. I don't want to be incriminated in any of these affairs. That person is renounced, but not as fully and perfectly renounced as somebody who positively takes everything of God's energy and uses it for the best service of God, for the best service of humanity, to regenerate everything as an offering of love to Lord and His creation. That is perfect renunciation. Therefore, if someone gives you 1,000,000 rupees, and you say, no, no, I will not touch it. That is one form of renunciation. But if someone gives you that 1,000,000 rupees and say, oh, okay, I will buy myself a big, beautiful house to become famous. That's selfishness. And if somebody gives you that 1,000,000 rupees and you think, oh, let me see how I can utilize this for the ultimate good of all living beings. That is perfect renunciation. Those things that can be used in God's service for the upliftment of others should never be rejected as being material. We should renounce the greedy mentality in which we are utilizing the things of this world. That is what must be renounced, not the utilization of the thing. If a knife is laying on the table, a thief will stab someone to death and rob someone with it. A surgeon will cure a person from disease and save his life with the same knife. Is the knife good or bad? Everything in this world is potentially good or bad only according to our consciousness. Education is good or bad according to our consciousness. We are learning so much in school. Education is the greatest power on earth, knowledge. If that knowledge is in the heart of an impure person, he's going to use that knowledge to cause great pollution, contamination, and distress in this world, as we see within society. But that same knowledge, if it is in the heart of someone who is in divine consciousness, he will utilize every bit of that knowledge for the true welfare of all living beings in the loving service of Krishna or God. So this is the type of renunciation that is taught in Gita, in all the great scriptures of the world. Arjuna was a warrior by profession. He wanted to go to the Himalayas and do like you are saying, close his eyes and just forget about it. And Krishna told him, no, you must do your duty. You must fight. You must use your bow and arrow. You must use your chariot. You must use your horses. You must use all the learning that you have acquired in regard to fighting. But do it in divine consciousness. And Duryodhana, he used the same things, but in the consciousness of greed and selfishness. So that is our choice in life. Not to give up the things of this world, but to use them in the spirit of devotion. Is there any other questions? Asking of what determines your next body? This is, we can understand in principle, but it is very difficult to understand the details. The laws of karma are very intricate and very complex because absolutely everything is thoroughly taken into consideration. Huh? You have no choice what your next body is going to be after you commit your activities. But you have the choice of what activities you're going to do beforehand, which will determine your next life. For instance, if I go to the airport and I board an Air India flight to London, and then I take off, and then I say to the airline hostess, I do not want to go to London, I want to go to Bangkok. Do you have choice where you're going to go? You had choice before you boarded the plane, but once you board, you have no choice. So similarly, we have a choice of what we're going to do in our life, which is going to determine our destination. But after we engage in those activities, we have no choice of where we're going. This is a basic principle of the law of karma. You have a choice to touch fire or not fire. But if you touch the fire, do you have a choice whether you're going to be burned? So therefore, human form of life means to analyze before we act of what the result will be. Shreyas and Prayas. Prayas is the animal nature, which means we simply act according to the immediate demands of the senses. And Shreyas is human intelligence, where we discriminate, is this good or is this bad, and we act according to what is for the ultimate good. It's like you're going to school. You would probably be having more fun not going to school. You could just be doing all sorts of fun games all day long. But you give up that and you accept hardship, tapasya. You're making sacrifice, saying no to what you like and saying yes to what you don't like, because in the future it will give you something better. Huh? That is called tapasya. That is the purpose of human life. To understand what is the ultimate goal of what I do, what I really want. And evaluating what we do on that basis, not on the basis of whether it feels good or not. So in this way, we have the choice right now to make our own destiny. Man makes his own destiny. But after you make your bed, you have to sleep in it. Therefore, let us try to understand what is the truth. And let us, with good intelligence, with proper guidance, and with a spiritual understanding of truth, let us always pursue